Welcome to the show about your company of one.
Hello, I'm Dale Callahan. I'm the author of Resumes Are Worthless, the definitive resource to becoming a company of one. And I am your guide through your journey. Welcome to the show. Hello, and this is Dale Callahan. We thank you for joining the show today that we're going to try to deal with this subject. Kind of an interesting subject today. You know, this is one of the first shows that we're doing. Technically, this is show number one because I started zero, but we're going to say this is show number one. But the I'm going to just jump right into dealing with a question that it really comes right down to. And that's how to increase your income. We're going to look at a couple of different questions here, starting with, you know, being a Christian. One of my first things is going biblically, what is God's view of work and money? You know, that's a question that I really have to deal with. Usually people don't ask the question specifically of, you know, is it okay to earn money? Is it okay to earn a lot more money? Is it okay to work? Is work evil? But that's in their heart. It's somewhat in our culture. We'll look at that question. Number two is a holistic view of your income. You know, really looking at the big picture of where all of your income comes from. If you've listened to the first show or the Maiden Voyage show, you would recognize that I look at you, and I think accurately, as a company, that you are a provider, a resource out there that and providing services to the community. So what's the holistic view of your income like a company would look at? So that's what the second thing we want to look at. And then just list how to increase your income on your job. Wow, that's an interesting one, isn't it? How do you increase your income on your job? And a lot of people, you know, when we're told, I'll just tell you some interesting stories. There's nothing else to say but to tell you some interesting stories about what happened. So those are the three larger issues that we will address today. Let's pick up here on the very first issue. Well, let me actually not do that. Let me back up for just a second. How to increase your income? You know, We almost sometimes act as if that's a taboo subject, that's, you know, we should be, especially Christians, we should be focused on more service and those kind of things. But, and, you know, and when me teaching at a university, one of the things I kind of like to challenge people with, because in my past, I've either been teaching electrical engineering seniors, and one of the questions I like to ask them is, what are you in this class for? You know, which always kind of stuns them when the faculty member walks in, the professor walks in, and what are you in here for? Well, they're like looking around, did we do something wrong? What have we done? But the reason is for them to think through what's their purpose. And so people will tell me, well, you know, and I was teaching a wireless communications when I first started doing this. And they would say, well, we want to learn about wireless. And, you know, the communication facilities, that wireless telecom is the future. Yeah, they give me all this nice stuff. And I'm like, well, really? You know, how many books have you read on wireless? Well, none, you know, because that wasn't what they were there. And the point was, when you drove them down to it, they were there to get a degree. But they weren't there to get a degree. They were there to get a job. But they didn't really want a job. What they really wanted was the income that came from having the skills that they were learning through the degree. It's about income. When we look at our graduate program, our Information Engineering and Management graduate program, it's an executive program. Therefore, everyone that comes into the program is working. Most of them are pretty darn well paid. They are very successful in their careers, I would say. Yet, why are they there? They are there to increase their income. That's the bottom line. That's what they are after. So I just want to explore here for just a few seconds. What's God's view of this? What's God's view? And I'm going to take you. I've got my trusty English Standard Version Bible here, and I'm going to look up a couple of texts here. That, you know, if you're doing a show, it probably makes a whole lot of sense to look up this text before you get on the show, but that's not what I've done. But I'm going to look up in Exodus 20, At least I know where it is, so that's helpful. Exodus 20, we're going to look at something about the fifth commandment. I mean, heck, if we're going to deal with stuff, let's deal with the straight to the source of the commandments. Now, we're not going to deal with the first couple here, but we're going to deal with the commandment of the Sabbath. And actually, I'm telling you the wrong commandment. That's the fourth commandment. You know, if we look at the commandments, I'm the Lord your God. Number one, you shall have no other gods before me. That's number one. You shall not have a graven carved image. Number two, you shall not take the name of the Lord God in vain. Number three, okay, those are the first three commandments. And they all have to do with our, as a matter of fact, the first four commandments all have to do with our relationship with God. The fifth commandment that I accidentally said is, you shall honor your mother and father. All the other commandments deal with relationships with people. Very important, obviously, but the first four. But the fourth one that I have missed out on is the Sabbath. And I just want to read it to you and just consider, and does this have anything to do with what we're doing? Absolutely. And this is not to tell you to go take the Sabbath right now, but to, it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Okay. That's where we focus at. And then it says, 6 days we shall labor and do all of our work, but then the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, your son, your daughter. Now, I'm not going to read all that. I want to focus in on the first part, because we are a culture of constant Sabbath takers. Now, that's probably hardly anything that but true, but because we're not Sabbath takers, but because we're certainly not keeping it holy. But we are a culture of vacationers, of time off, of entertainment. But it says, 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work. So the focus here is on the 6 days of doing your labor and doing your work. That's where I want to focus on, because we all put all our attention and worrying about keeping the Sabbath holy. And, of course, the churches argue and debate on what that means, and Christians debate on what that means. That's not my point. My point is, let's focus on the first 6 days. Are you doing your work? You know, it is God's command that we work. That's the first part of this, is not Sabbathing. The first part of this, and I might call this a work commandment. Work for 6 days and take a rest. Instead, we've moved this to work for 5 days and then take two rest days. Or, you know, we look at this different. Now, also think about, and we just do for the brevity of time, when we do this in courses, a lot of times we go over this in a lot more detail, but for the brevity of time, we'll just say, when did work come in? We always consider work as that four-letter word, and we make fun of it, TGIF, you know. Our culture is so caught up in hating work, and we think work is evil. Work is bad. And how often do you see work in that context when people talk about work being bad? People talk about work being something they suffer through. But if you look at the Bible and you see that there's sin, work did not come after sin. Matter of fact, I would bring you back to Genesis 1, right after the creation of man, Genesis 1, 2, and up to where Genesis 3, where sin comes into the world, there's work. Man is told to take dominion. That means take control. That means manage. That means work. We're here to work. Now, sin made work more challenging, but work is not evil. Okay? Work is not evil. That's very, very important for us to look at. So when I look at that, in church settings, when we're teaching this material, people really will struggle with that. They'll say, wow, yeah, that's true. Work is, God's given you work. Now, you may feel like God hasn't given you your job, but that's another story. Then, what's God's view of money? We always hear money is the root of all evil. We hear that statement. And that's not the way it's worded in the Bible. As a matter of fact, I'll challenge you to find that in the Bible. And find in the Bible where it says what is really true. And if you look this up, this would be a good Bible study for you. And some of you will know this right off the bat. If you don't, and if maybe you don't even read the Bible, but you can go to the Bible Gateway or some online resource, find it. What does God really say about it? I'll tell you what he says, and I want you to find it and double-check me, because you should never believe me on the Bible, but or anybody else for that matter. It's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all... Sorry about that. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. That's what we're looking at here. So it's, again, that goes back to those first couple of commandments. If I put money above God, evil. If I put money above my work to serve God, evil. So it's the love of money. In other words, when we start worshiping money, we're in trouble. Now, people will, we really struggle in our society, gets caught up in wealthy people. You know, and people really have, people in the church, many of you, matter of fact, if you think that you aren't caught up into thinking wealthy people are wealth is evil, I would recommend to you the book, Thou Shall Prosper by Rabbi Daniel Lapin. It's Thou Shall Prosper, a great book that will open your eyes, even if you're the raw capitalist, it will open your eyes to how you view money. Poor people, as a matter of fact, spend more time thinking about money than rich people do. Now, I don't know if that's worship or not. I'll let you be the judge of that. But in Lapin's book, he talks about if you serve God, sometimes it's hard to serve God. What does it mean to serve God? Well, to serve God is to serve other people, right? If I'm serving other people, and there's lots of text on that. We won't get into that right now, but there's lots of text on serving other people. We serve people. That's our service to God. We work for God, not for man. So when I serve you, when I'm doing this on this podcast right now, and I serve you, now maybe this is a bad example because you're not paying for this, but when I serve you in some way, then you thank me, and a lot of times your thanks will come in terms of dollar bills. That's a thank you note. Now, if you think about that, that sounds kind of silly and cheesy, but let me put it to you in a bit different way, and some of you are going to relate to this. I have a guy that does a lot of work for me on rental property, on my home. He's the kind of guy, him and his coworker, they can tackle any task. And I can do home repairs and stuff like that, but I just don't have time. But this guy, Tony, can come in here, and Tony can do anything you ask. And he does great work. He shows up, all those things you want. And he has a great rate. And initially when I started working with him, I was a little concerned that he was charging too little. And it's not because I just have tons of money I want to throw at people. No, I don't. I'm actually fairly cheap. But I do know that if Tony charges too little, he will quit doing it. And therefore, I lose him as a resource. So there is this balance. Yes, I want to pay a minimal amount, but I want to pay enough that he wants to continue doing this and he can grow his business. And you probably know people you work with that are in that same situation. You would rather pay them than lose them. That's that thank you note. That's God's economy. I serve other people and I keep serving other people, but I have to put food on my table and provide for my children and provide for my family, which, by the way, is also biblical. And you can find many verses to that. That's another thing. I'd love comments on that. But that's how it is. God has asked us, not ask us. I think this is pretty clear. Look back at this commandment. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor. It doesn't say 6 days you may labor. It doesn't say 6 days you can labor if you're not getting an unemployment check. It says, 6 days you shall labor. God has called us to work, And God has put us in an economy that is driven by money. It's just easier to exchange dollar bills and checks and check transactions than goats and pigs in our society. So that's our means of transaction. So that's, to me, that's God's view of work and money. So let's take some looks at what does that mean? What do we deal with our money and our income? How do we do it? Okay, let's look back at that now. How do I deal with this? So I almost call this, let's look at a holistic view of your income. Yeah, look at the big picture. You know, as a matter of fact, I would encourage you to take out pen and paper, you know, during, after, before, whenever, and write down all your sources of income. You can think about yourself, draw that little circle, and here I am, a company. Now I can draw all my sources of outflow of money. I pay mortgages, I pay payments, I pay power bills and those kind of things. Hopefully, if you're on the Dave Ramsey plan, you just only have bills of sustainability, power and food and things like that. So you're not paying for debt and those kind of issues. But I'll let Dave Ramsey handle that issue. But look at your sources of income. Where do they come from? You know, if you're most people, you have a job and they pay a salary. Some of you will have another source of income that is something like a tax refund. Now, I wouldn't call that a source of income necessarily, but you might look at it that way. That's a source of income. Now, you might also have sources of income that look like rental property or royalties or, you know, wherever. All the money that comes into your household budget, what are they? Look at them. And then look at your main source of income. So this is a great brainstorming exercise. Because what you're looking for is untapped resources. Sit there and brainstorm. Take some time out with you and your spouse or you and yourself if you're not married. You look about, how can I make better use of these sources of income? Can I increase the income from every level? This is a common business decision, by the way. If you're a business, which hopefully you understand by now you are, but in the traditional sense, if you're a business, you look at where your income is coming from and you say, well, gee, a massive amount of income is coming from this one source. How can I increase the income? Or maybe, hey, we've got a little money trickling in from this other source over here. How can I increase that? Let me give you some examples, and I'm not going to give you any names of these people. I can because I haven't gotten their permission up front. But if you want to email me or something, I can put you in touch with someone. This is just a smattering. We see this all the time about some clients we work with. One person had rental income. They had a job, and he and his wife had rental income from a vacation rental on a lake property. And what they were looking at is they made a certain amount of money per year, but as they kind of did this little analysis, they realized, wow, you know, if we did maybe a little advertising on HomeAway or Vacations or some of the website Vacation Rentals by Owners, VRBO, we could maybe increase that rental income. And we did a few little fix-up things there, some of the people wanted. And they did. They've increased their rental income just by kind of taking an objective view of that. So they were looking at that one source of your income. Now, we're going to get to our salary later, but let me give you another one. This one gal, again, I'm almost saying her name, but she works, she has a job and a resource, but her husband and her father-in-law own a trucking company. And in the trucking company, you know, it's a very tight margins, very competitive. People, you know, you basically are paid per mile, and it's so competitive, you know, your margins are getting tiny. And so they were just looking at how can they make more money, and they did a simple thing. They just went out to the drivers and said, look, when you're land at a store or a place and you're making a delivery, just walk in there and meet the manager, because most of these deliveries happen through brokers, and so the brokers are shopping the best deal for truckers. So tell the drivers, when you stop at a place, go in, meet the owner, have a business relationship. Kind of an odd conversation, right? But go in and meet the owner and just say, hey, you know, I'm doing your deliveries. Do you have any other kind of deliveries you do? It was stunning that they found out many of the people, like furniture companies and all, were telling them, yeah, we do deliveries all the time and we're always having to do the broker. And they didn't necessarily like the broker deal. They kind of would rather have a relationship with a trucking company. They made I know she was telling me they made $2,500 in one conversation. One conversation. So, and how many more conversations? But it's just a simple thing. Our trucks are already there. The drivers are waiting. They're not doing anything. Help them take a little more control of their income by doing that. Other people, we've focused on their day jobs. You know, more hours, more focus on things, more conversation, increase in pay. Let me just tell you, there's only two ways to increase your income. Okay, you can write this down. There's only two ways. Number one is to work more hours. If I get paid $9 an hour, work more hours. I make more money, right? That has limitations, obviously. The obvious thing we want to do is become more valuable. That's the way really to increase our income, is to become more valuable. So let's talk about now. Let's go to the subject of how to increase income on your job, you know, the J-O-B thing. How do I increase my income there? Maybe by becoming more valuable. All right, increasing your income on your job. I'm going to walk you through, and just this is a, I hope most of you consider this an aha moment or a duh moment. Maybe you're looking at situations of where's your job. Let me just tell you, one of the things we do in our graduate program, and I may have shared this before, but I'm going to share it again because this is a little shocking. We're fairly non-traditional academic in the sense that we're very real. Now, I'm not making fun of academics, but I mean, what we do is very real. We focus on bringing people what they really are looking for. Now, does that make sense? We started out the show talking about when people come into the program, they're actually looking to increase their pay, to increase their possibilities. That's why they're paying $25,000 for a graduate degree. So one of the things we do is we tell them it's a requirement for a class that they find ways to increase their income. Now, we actually have a dollar figure that we're trying to get them to increase their income, and that's $6,000. That's for that semester. That's $25,000 over the entire program that you're trying to increase your income. But for this one section, it's a $6,000 increase. So what we are trying to do, and by the way, when we say that, it's just stunning. People will say, it can't be done. Can't be done. You don't understand. I work for a large corporation, and we only do pay raises once a year, and we have this pay scale, and I'm at the top of my pay grade, and all these kind of things that probably you are saying right now, I've said before. I know exactly what you're talking about. However, I also know what it looks like to be from the CEO's position, from the director's position, from whatever. If you're in a pay scale, and we do this all the time, if you're in a pay scale and we want to pay you more that's outside that pay scale, we change your pay scale. If it's not time to promote you, we play other games. Now, I say that, I don't mean illegal games or anything. I mean, we just, you know, part of management's responsibility inside of a company is to use the resources they have to arrange things in such a way so that they get the work done the most productive way. In other words, management of companies are not run by rules. The rules of are to help the management run the company, not to run the managers who are trying to run the company, if that makes any sense to you at all. And in some companies, I know some managers get caught up in the rules and we can't do certain things, but look, they're just tools. They're tools there to give them some guidelines. They're tools there to do. Most of the tools are there to keep them out of court, by the way. You know, I can't pay Jane more than I pay Paul because, you know, they're doing the same job and that one of them is going to sue me. Obviously, the lower paid one's going to sue me. So what we want to do is on your job, and I recommend you write this down. Whatever is your main source of income, write down the names of your customers. Now, we've kind of already done this. This is a major company of one thing, but write down the names of your customers. Who are they? So if you're a project manager inside of a corporation, let's say I work for AT&T and I'm a project manager, the people in the department, maybe it's marketing, that I'm doing a project that comes between something between operations and marketing. So some of my customers are in operations because they want product delivered, and they need the cooperation from the marketing side. And some of the customers are in marketing, vice versa. They want the cooperation from operations. And when I pull all this together, I look at, okay, those guys are my customers, those people are my customers, those gals are my customers, and my boss, my immediate boss, which by the way may not be in any of those transactions because I'm managing projects, but maybe I'm part of a project management organization, so my project management boss may be my customer, maybe my director, vice president, whoever is responsible for the budget under which my salary comes, obviously they're a customer. And if I work for a company like AT&T, it's probably not necessarily my boss. They're in the chain. It may not be my director. It may be a couple of flavors up before I get to the people who really authorize the budget. So all of these people are my customers. And if you're in a large organization such as AT&T and you have a reasonable responsibility, it's not unlikely that you'll have 20-plus customers. Now, you might find out that two or three of them are more key and functional than the others. But all of these people have, if you drew the figure last time about the income coming to you and your customers and you're the business, all of these people that we're talking about, each and every one of them control your income. Through their words, through their actions, they can make it stop, they can make it go, they control your income. So your job then is to go talk to your customers and then get out there and go talk to them one-on-one and just have a conversation. And what I like to do is take a sheet of paper and write down, hey, you know, Joe over here is my customer, and here's the things I think I do to serve Joe. Because he is in that marketing operations and he needs certain data from me as a project manager. Here's the things I think I do. Here's the tangible things I do. Here's the intangible ones I do. Put them on paper. And then go sit down with Joe and say, hey, Joe, you know, I realize I was listening to this crazy guy on podcast, and I realize that you're my customer. And that may throw Joe a little back, but, you know, keep having the conversation. You're my customer. I'm here to serve you. Here's the things I think I do to serve you. Tell me, do I have this right? Is this your view? And get into a honest dialogue about this, about what they think adds value, because you've written down 20 things, and maybe they'll look at this and say, you know, the thing you do most for me, you don't even have on this list. The thing you do most for me is making sure the meeting is called on time, because nobody else has ever done that. And you look at this as a trivial matter, by the way, and, you know, but so therefore you haven't even put it on the list. He looks at it as a very high valued deliverable. So that's important that you know that. So what happens is you think this is what you offer the customer, and the customer's telling you, well, no, this one item number 3 and number 7 and number 9 that you have here, I don't care about. I didn't even know you did them. So what happens is you've changed the relationship immediately just by doing this. Now, I'm going to tell you a few examples in just a minute of people who have actually done what we're talking about. And I could tell you examples all day long, but I'm going to just give you a few examples of people who have done this and who have gotten pay raises, okay? And some pretty dramatic pay raises. But you go and you're having this conversation. I recommend you do this with every single customer. And you go back with Joe and you say, okay, Joe, I've kind of fixed this up. And, you know, I've redone the document based upon what you've done. Tell me, what are the 3 most critical things I do for you? You keep driving into the conversation, trying to understand how you as a business adds value. Now, this may sound really silly to you, but if you've ever done business with a company, you know they're always sending out surveys. They may ask you questions. They may study data that you don't even know they're studying. Matter of fact, they probably do. They're constantly trying to understand how they add value to you, because they know one thing, If they can do more of that one little thing that adds value and less of those things you don't care about, they're going to make more money and spend less money. Okay? That's really important because there's things I can guarantee you. As a matter of fact, if you find it is not true, I want you to write me and tell me. You can comment publicly on Twitter to me or a blog post or something. I can guarantee you there are things that you are doing that when you talk to all of your customers, they don't care. They don't even know you're doing them. You're spending your time and your energy doing stuff that nobody cares. Over and over and over again, we see that happening, that people are realizing, wow, I can just quit doing. I'm working 60 hours a week. I realize that 20 hours of the week is what adds all the value. All the other stuff, some of the stuff I'm doing is fluff. Wouldn't it be nice to know that? It's amazing how many people have not had conversations with their customers. And even people who will tell me, yeah, Dale, I do this all the time. You know, I have conversation with my customers. We tell them anyway, especially in IEM because it's a requirement. Sit down, do it, document it. And they'll come back and say, you know, I talk to them all the time and we constantly have open communication. But when I brought this right in front of them in plain black and white, I realized we weren't having honest conversations. That they came out and they told me, well, you know, Dale, now that you specifically ask, we feel like you're failing in this one area. Wow. What a stunning statement. I was part of a wireless company. It's an entrepreneurial effort, venture-based, venture-backed. We had one major client/partner that we dealt with. We had a great relationship, and we shared office space with them. They made lots of money. But I went in one day just casually because they had asked me to take over as a CEO, and I went in and talked to the CEO of that company and sat down and said, hey, Stuart, you know, we're having coffee, we're just having this casual conversation because, you know, we're buddies. Stuart, tell me, how are we doing? What do you think's going on with us? And he kind of gave me this funny look. It was very quiet. You know, and I was asking the conversation, how are we doing? And I kind of threw several of these questions out. This wasn't so formal, but because I thought we had a great relationship. And he says, well, hang on a second. And he goes over to his computer and prints out some things. And I'm thinking, what's he doing? And he brings back to me and he says, well, a person on your staff, one of the people in the company, sent me this email. And it says this would be done by Thursday, last Thursday. He said, it's still not done. And it wasn't an important thing. You know, it was one of these little casual things that he said. And then he says, he hands me another one. He says, and this, you know, Jeff, I'm changing the name here. Jeff said that this would be done last month. And again, it was not a very high valued thing. It was kind of irrelevant. But he said it would be done. And then he tells me, you know, in the hallway the other day, I asked for something and somebody said that would be done. Hadn't been done yet. And his point was, he said, Dale, I have in before you a stack of broken promises. He says, it's my policy when I do deal with companies that if they break promises, that I quit doing business with them. He said, one more broken promise and you guys are toast. Wow, that was a wide awakening. That I took that list and everything on that list that had not been done was done by the end of the day because it was easy to do. But it was this trivial walking through the hallway. Yeah, I'll get that for you. I mean, have you ever done that? Have you ever made a promise? And remember, your word is a commitment. Have you ever made that promise and let it drop? Does that come up on your list with your customers? It may. This is why you should be having this conversation. When I've had these conversations, sometimes I've had awakening moments like that. I'm like, duh, that's really scary. I've had other conversations with customers, and I'll call them and I'll say, how are we doing? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And, you know, and this is what I think we're doing. And it's amazing, and especially in business relationships, people will tell me, Dale, we do business with all kinds of companies. You're the only company that ever calls and asks how you're doing. Well, now, that, by the way, that's a much better feeling I get from that one than I did when I was talking to Stuart. But you're like, wow, this is so easy. And I learn things. I learn where they're weak. I learn what they need. I learn products and services they would like us to deliver that they don't. So this is important conversation, because what we're trying to do, remember, there's only two ways to increase your income. One is to make more work, more hours. The other is to become more valuable. In doing what we're talking about right now, you start to understand where your customer measures value. Extremely important. And you start to understand things they don't value. Extremely important. You quit doing some things, you start doing more of other things. Let me just tell you, when we did this last time, one gentleman works for a large organization, went and had these conversations, and we had a $25,000 that you're supposed to raise your salary over a period of time. He went and had these conversations, and just, and he came back telling me, he says, it was like they were stunned all I was doing. He said, I knew I was working hard, I knew I was delivering. He says, but having the conversation seemed to bring it to light to them, and they promoted him. $25,000 worth of promotion. So instantaneously, he had met the goal of the entire program to increase his salary by $25,000. And they even made him promises of other things they would love to do that they didn't have the capacity for doing right now, but huge, huge benefit to them. Another guy in a large company came back, and he kind of got the feedback that, hey, you know, we can't really do anything for you right now, because he was in that, hey, papers. But he brought awareness, and they said, wow. You know, you are doing a lot. You're serving us well. You know, and they cleared up, and they, he honed his work schedule and did some things better. And his manager came back to him later, and he says, look, he says, I realize I can't, you, how valuable you are. I cannot pay you more right now, but that's going to happen. Now, that's a promise, and you know how promises can go. And his manager may not be in total control. He says, but I have the ability to pay people up to $600 on the spot bonus, and I'm paying you that now. So in one conversation, he made $600. Another gal who was working for a company she didn't particularly like, but she, and it was a family-owned, rather large company, but family-owned company. And she started having these conversations internal. Now, her whole goal was to move out, to get another job with another company. But as she started having these internal conversations, weird things started to happen. She was asking questions about how she added value, how her department added value, and she would start honing things that she was doing. And she was just, as she said, I was just kind of trying to survive. But she got noticed. And the next thing she knows, she's moved up. She's moved to another division. She's somewhat in charge of asking these questions for the entire company. And she now loves her job and makes more money, all in the process. And by the way, none of these people were really asking for pay raises. They were asking to try to understand where they had value. And this was just the beginning. I mean, most people, you know, they might go through this process a little bit longer, and you can go through this. I mean, in the book and some of the materials and some of our training materials, we go through, you know, you may not get this instant gratification, but we go through, how do you do this? How do you use these tools to increase your value? This is what we're talking about, though. You have control. You should take control. So now we want to encourage you, now that you know, we've kind of gone over some very basic ideas, but you know, these little simple ideas can make, just trying them, this is just a case of jumping in and doing, saying you can get really good control of your income. It's amazing. You know, again, I will repeat what I probably put on the first show, is the difference between the business owner and the entrepreneur and the typical corporate employee is income streams. You have, if you're the typical corporate employee, you have one main stream of income. That income gets impacted, you're in trouble. You move into crisis mode. If you're an entrepreneur in a business, you have multiple streams of income. And if one of them gets impacted, it hurts, it stings, but it's not crisis. So what we want to do is look at, you know, how do you increase your income? You know, I think it's a great exercise. A lot of our training and material goes through not only how do you increase your daytime income, your job, how do you increase some of those multiple streams of income to give you some balance and some control. You know, and we're not talking about working 16, 70 hours a week. We're just talking about doing some things that will add value. Being good stewards of your time, your skills, your money, you know, because one of the worst things that happen to families is income gets walloped. It puts your family into a crisis. So are you really being a good steward of your family by having one source of income or by not maximizing that source of income? Are you being faithful to your company even by not maximizing that source of income? Because maybe you're not delivering the value that you should be delivering. So as I look at this, you know, look at your big picture. Look at your main job, your spouse's jobs, tax refunds, even though it's not income, royalties. You know, do you have royalties coming from something you've done, side jobs, stuff you sold, volunteer jobs? I know some people right now that have turned their volunteer jobs into a pretty major source of income. And it's a win-win for everyone involved. Matter of fact, I've seen that happen many times. So you want to look at these sources of income or things that you're doing to add value and do some analysis. You know, it's all about taking control. All right, that is the end of our show for today. You know, we looked at a lot of stuff here. What's God's view of money? What's God's view of work? A holistic view of in your income, how to increase your income on your job. I hope you will try some of these things. Look, I mean, we just can't cover everything in a show, but you know, we're not talking rocket science here. We're talking little things that you can do. You can kind of discover these things in your own way. They're fairly friendly conversations. It should be pretty obvious. In my view, I found that most things, most books I read, most of the things I find is genius. I'll say, well, that's obvious. That guy just pointed it out to me in a different way that I hadn't thought about, because most things are, in fact, obvious. I think there's some reference there about there's nothing new under the sun, but we'll let you plug in on that one also. I want to thank you for visiting us. I would ask that you join the conversation in a sense. You know, so many people, they're quiet, a silent majority. It's not about Republican, Democrat, conservative, or anything else. It's just about the majority of people tend to be silent and not let their opinions be told. How valuable are those Amazon reviews? How valuable are product reviews? Be part of that. Review this, if you will, review this on iTunes. We thank you, but so do other people. Thank you for your help in guiding them in reviewing what you're listening to and what you're doing. Comment on blog, comment on my blog, comment on other people's blogs. Add value, add thanks. You know, for those, most bloggers, by the way, get very, very, and the percentage of comments, I mean, so if you're seeing a blogger get 2 or 3 comments, that means there's hundreds and hundreds of people reading their things, but they don't get any feedback a lot of times. They may get some emails and things like that. Most of mine come back through emails. Join the conversation. Be part of that. So join my blog. You can find me at dalecallahan.com. You know, why do we even say that? Just Google the word Dale Callahan, just or my name, D-A-L-E, and then Callahan, C-A-L-L-A-H-A-N. The other day I spelled that wrong for somebody. You can find me on Twitter at it's just Dale Callahan, and Facebook at Dale Callahan. You can find this material. All those things are free, ways to interact with me. There you can find my email there. And matter of fact, you can leave a voice question on my blog. It doesn't go to anybody else. It just comes to me. My book is Resumes Are Worthless. It really takes apart some of these things that we're talking about and how to take control and how to do some of these things in a lot more detail than we can cover here. Of course, we have our graduate program. It begins every fall, mid-August actually, at the university. It's an online distance education program. called Information Engineering and Management. You can look up IEM, the letters IEMUAB on Google, and you will go straight there. And I'm the director of that program, and this is some of the material we do, teaching people how to be a company of one. Thank you for joining us.